following is an exclusive presentation from Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ,
the exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Oh, 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 it's Mac and Bo on your radio, baby.
This is my friend, Matt.
Posh, come on, Posh.
This is my friend, T-Bone.
What's up, the fun?
I can't go to work without listening to Mac and Bone.
Do it live.
We've talked since I retired about the idea of me coaching, and I think there's a strong desire for sure. So people will come up to me and they'll be like, oh, you look like you're having so much fun in media. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's fun. And there are great days. There are bad days too. There's some really bad days. I leave my place of work, whatever it may be, and I'm discouraged. Mm. And that's not a knock on anyone. That's just, I loved every day in the NBA. There were good days and bad days, but I loved every day. I was so grateful for every day.
There you go, J.J. Redick telling Pablo Torre on Pablo's podcast, yes, he would be interested in coaching. He's talking about why and how being in basketball, Bone, makes him feel. And that was just kind of a comment that, you know, if you noticed that, Bone, when it was said a little while back, okay, all right, J.J. Redick wants to coach someday. Now it really hits home because of Shams Charania's report yesterday that the Charlotte Hornets are interviewing J.J. Redick for the head coaching job. And as expected, this one is polarizing. There are so many elements, whether it is the lack of any coaching experience other than apparently his 10-year-old's travel team, according to James Plowright on Twitter, and the fact that he is one of the most polarizing Duke players ever. Bone, even at the end of his long career, when he would touch the basketball over there at the Hive, he would get the boos, collective boos, when he touched the basketball every time. So, like, this is so freaking riveting as a topic. It really is.
Right now, the Charlotte Comfort Systems temperature, 46 degrees, up to $1,500 in rebates is available on qualified purchases from Charlotte Comfort Systems. You're right. It's hard to avoid a Duke, UNC, ACC angle from all this with how polarizing it is. But you can also look at it as, you know, it's not ideal, but he's a very, very, very smart basketball mind that can connect with the modern day players. So you can also look at it from that angle as well, not just where he played college basketball.
Well, that's what I said. I said there are two angles.
Yeah,
one
that's
is
what I'm saying.
To
yes.
me, one is the lack of experience, and then the other one is it's inevitable, Bone. The only way you could top this in terms of polarizing college basketball players for our audience is to go hire Grayson Allen as your coach. Or Christian Laettner.
Hansborough, too.
Like, but Hansborough, I would think, because you have more Carolina fans than Duke fans.
Yeah, okay.
That's the thing, man. But listen, the Duke thing shouldn't really be a part of whether or not you want him as a coach. If the Hornets can hire a good coach, you should want that coach from anywhere if you're a true Hornets fan. I just hate the idea because it seems gimmicky. It seems like, and like I want to take our new ownership serious, Bone. They're going to do it the right way, right? Early returns art seems like they're going to do it different. They're going to do it in a better way than MJ did. And then I hear this, and it's like, are we real serious? Like, the owners fell in love with a guy because they listened to his podcast and want him to be the coach? Like, it just seems gimmicky and goofy to me, man, because he doesn't have any experience.
My question to you again, though, about the experience thing, and it's right, I can't deny that he doesn't have coaching experience even as an assistant. And the guys that go straight from playing without any coaching in between to coaching, it's not the most ideal list. But I will also, Matt, counter with a list of guys that do have experience that we know of. Ready for this? All these guys had experience. Well, you tell me how this went. Ready? Bernie Bickerstaff, Sam Vincent, Larry Brown, Paul Silas Stint II, Mike Dunlap, Steve Clifford, James Borrego. How is the franchise done in the last 20 years when they've hired guys that have experience? Some of those guys, man, Sam Vincent was an assistant. Mike Dunlap was an assistant. Plenty of these guys had experience before they got here. How'd that go for them?
But do you think that, like...
So there are plenty of examples of guys that have
experience. But where are the examples of the inexperienced guys that never coached at any level and were great coaches, though? Because I have a list here, and I was crediting in the first hour Steve Kerr, because he's on this list. But you reminded me that Steve Kirk was an assistant for Pop.
It's not a deep list.
So there's really, like, I know Jason Kidd's going on to have a good career, but he didn't last in Brooklyn, right? Apparently was a pain in the rear end. Steve Nash, Derek Fisher are, like, the two last ones. Like, it just, I don't know, man. I want to, like, we got a message from Chad who says, I want to believe they're going to be a serious basketball operation, and then they do this. It reeks of Mike Mayock bone being hired as the GM because Mark Davis probably thought he was good on TV. Thought he sounded smart on TV. That's the vibes I'm getting in this. And I also think you like JJ so much personally that I think you're getting caught up in that.
I could never, that clouds my judgment. No, I listened to his podcast also. I know his career. I know what kind of basketball mind this dude has. And I can guarantee you he's looking at the possibility of Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball, and if LaMelo's healthy, the offensive basketball he can run. This guy's not some rube. He was in the league for...
I'm not saying he's really smart.
He was in the league for 16 years.
How about serving as an assistant for a year?
Well, how about, you know what I mean? What about this idea?
How about go and actually work your ass off like the other coaches are, rather than sit on TV and then get handed this opportunity Jeff Saturday style?
That's different.
You know what I mean?
He interviewed last year, at least in the offseason for Toronto and other teams.
He interviewed once. He didn't actually coach, though.
I'm saying Jeff Saturday was literally plucked from TV in the middle of a season. At least this guy has done interviews before. I'll say this, too. Do you think he'd be coming alone? Do you think JJ is not smart enough to put a very veteran staff around him?
Yeah, he'd have to.
You don't think that JJ Mack is probably, I would guess, going to call up his guy Stan Van Gundy and say, hey, man, I got an opportunity here. I need some help. You don't think that he could call possibly Jeff Van Gundy, who's always looking to get back into the league? You don't think, Mack, he's going to have, when a guy played in the league for that long, for that many teams, with that many players and coaches, he's going to have deep, deep connections to try to put a staff together.
Then hire those guys. Like, if they're going to be on the staff, why are you wasting time putting J.J. Redick as your head coach? You could just have him as an assistant to these guys and then
I feel like because he's not willing to do the work as an assistant. He wants to do
TV,
paid big money to do TV, and then skip the line and go straight. And I just don't like that. I think coaching is a profession where I think you got to grind and pay your dues and work your way up. And I don't like that he just goes and acts like Captain Know-It-All on TV and on his podcast, and we're going to be the team. Let someone else give him that shot. And listen, he may end up being a great coach. I just don't want to take the risk with the track record of inexperienced coaches. Isaiah Thomas is another one, Magic Johnson, guys that were just thrown out there without any experience coaching anything. Like,
and a lot of those guys, the thing was, they had great rosters. This is a good roster. I think there's potential. But, like, is this a roster that is guaranteed to win when you come in and take it over? Because a lot of those guys,
I think also, there's a risk
they run
in
themselves.
Here's the other thing. If they were interviewing J.J. Redick and there was other guys on the list of names here, because obviously the search is not going as well as they thought, but they're still going on here, and Cliff resigned 7 games to go, and they're still trying to figure things out. If there was a list of guys, your Budenholzers and these guys that are accomplished head coaches, and you'd say, why would they interview J.J. Redick when they have A, B, C, and D of experienced guys as head coaches that have done it before, I would say, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. Go get a guy that's been there off those list of guys. But who are we enamored with in the search here? I know Charles Lee's name comes up, but all the guys that we're talking about, there's no guarantees there either. If you want to go through the names of immediate players that failed, what about the hundreds of assistant coaches that fail as well?
No, that's true. That's
so
fair.
There's no guarantee that Charles Lee comes in here and is like all these guys that are on the list. Who are these guys?
That's fair. By the way,
who are these people?
By the way, they have not hired J.J. Redick. It's just a report from Shams Charania. They are interviewing J.J. Redick, as Toronto did last year. Toronto ended up not hiring him.
And don't discount the young players now looking up to a guy that they see and hear all the time and know in J.J. Redick also.
I think he's got the same mentality that Kidd has, though. I think he's going to feel like he knows more than any of these guys, and there will be a lot of arguments in the locker room.
How do you know that?
I mean, you've seen how confrontational he is on television. Like,
so he's definitely a know-it-all, but I don't know how that translates into coaching.
He was also regarded as like a pretty beloved teammate for 16 years with this guy. So how do we know that?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is.
You're assuming that he's going to argue with the team. You don't know that for sure.
I mean, I've seen his mentality on podcasts and on television. It's not great.
This texter says Larry Bird did very well after being a player and being put to coach. Yeah, I don't think he had any previous. He's on the list here, too. And he went to the playoffs 3 years, won a bunch of series. He just didn't. You know, he wanted to go upstairs in the front office, didn't want to stay in the coaching long term. But it's just a short list of the ones who have gone right from coaching with no experience or right from playing with no experience being on a staff. That's all I'm saying. It's just.
Yeah, Bird went right. Bird went.
It feels a little goofy. It feels a little gimmicky to me. And that's all I'm saying. This texter says 704 number. Bone, if this was Tyler Hansbrough being interviewed to be the Hornets coach, I feel like you would feel differently about experience.
What's that?
Someone says if it was Tyler Hansbrough, you'd feel differently about not having experience.
I think that's disrespecting what I do on this radio show. You don't think I can separate from
what? Would you be excited?
Would you be excited
if Tyler Hansbrough? I'm asking though. Would you be excited if Tyler Hansbrough was being interviewed?
I would not at all. I would not use the word hate like you did, but I also like Tyler Hansbrough is a different personality than J.J. Redick is. So it's a different journey to this point. Like, JJ's at least, like, involved in the NBA in some circles right now. Hansbrough would be more like Jeff Saturday because that would be really out of left.
Okay, well, then Brendan Haywood. Brendan Haywood does NBA TV. He does all that kind of stuff.
Would you be okay with that? I don't think – you guys are trying to make it – see, you guys
– Oh, it's definitely influence. You're just playing yourself if you think there's not.
You right there are doing
you
what you're –
You right there.
Or accusing me of what you're doing.
That's not real.
What's he doing? You can't separate your JJ hate from Duke hate.
I mean, I don't think I just think his mentality sucks. I just told you that. I think it's terrible.
You don't know that.
I've watched him for two years.
Who do you want? Who do you want to be the coach of the Hornets?
Well, you probably think I should want Jerry Stackhouse.
Who do you want?
I would rather Charles Lee. I would rather really anybody that has some sort of experience because. It matters in this league. Somebody that the players will respect.
What's Charles Lee's head coaching experience?
I mean, he doesn't have any.
All right, there you go.
But he has an assistant coach.
Come on, don't. You know better than that.
This is about Bone.
At least he's coached guys that aren't 10 years old.
Here's the problem. There's no one else we love. All we're saying is Charles Lee. There's nobody else that we love out there.
Charles Lee. Chris Quinn's better than him.
Who do we want?
Bone.
Who do we want?
Are you not listening?
Not a guy that's going straight from TV. And the thing is, this is the same. Someone said it earlier, and I'll bring it up. This is the same as the Greg Olsen thing. When the word got out where Greg said, hey, I'll coach the team or whatever. I love Greg Olsen. I didn't like that idea. He had never coached football, right? He had never coached in the NFL or anything like that. It's the same thing for me. I don't like the Mike Mayock jump from TV to the front office either. I just want and you were more amenable to the Greg Olsen thing. I said I think he'd be great in the front office like John Lynch. I don't like this idea of this dude has done no coaching, and just because he's famous on TV, we're the team that's getting, like, I don't want my team to be the one to hire the famous guy on TV, the good-looking famous guy on TV. It makes me worry, Bone, that our leadership is being seduced by watching this dude on TV, rather than just looking for someone who's put the work in the coaching profession, and the next step is to be a head coach. And I don't think that's that hard to understand.
Well, he put work in. Like, it was on the court. It was for 16 years.
That's different. Come on, man.
It still worked, though. It still worked. Everybody out, though.
You've got to understand what I'm saying. You're not even acknowledging and understand what I'm saying.
Because you're not being open-minded. You started the show by saying how much you hate it.
And I'm telling you why. I don't want any TV schmuck that has never coached. I said it about Olsen, and I'm saying it about Redick. I'm consistent in that respect. You're acting like this isn't a valid point, and it's an extremely valid point. And you're up in your feels because you think this is the smartest guy on NBA TV.
Yeah,
you talk about him every day. You love this man. So this is your guy. But I'm telling you, your guy I'd feel better about if he coached a little bit. That's all.
One more question before we go to break. Answer me this. In the history of this franchise in the last 20 years since they returned, how many hires have they made that has player cachet where the players will revere that guy?
I don't know. They had an owner, and I was told.
How do you know they're going to revere him?
They had the most player cachet ever as an owner, and I was told that was going to matter, and it didn't. So anyway, let's not with the cachet. Let Jeff Peterson hire a real experienced coach.
When he goes on to have a good coaching career, come back and see me. The Mac and Bone Show, Sports Radio, 92.7 WFN.
He won't even last 2 years.
Okay. Oh, you want to bet on that?
Yeah, I'll bet.
You bet on that?
I'll bet a month's salary that he doesn't last.
A month's salary that he doesn't last 2 years.
Doesn't last in the NBA.
In the whole league coaching.
First of all, he'll never get an opportunity, so it doesn't matter.
His whole career, he won't last 2 years coaching.
As a head coach.
All right. I've never won a bet more in my life than that. Never last 2 years.
No chance.
All right.
Loser gives his car to the other guy. It's done.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
Joining us now on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. She needs no introduction, but I will give her one. Four-time National Coach of the Year. Six-time SEC Coach of the Year. First former Naismith Player of the Year to also be a National Coach of the Year. 2013 Naismith Hall of Famer. And last but not least, three-time national champion and the drippiest coach in all of the land. Former Charlotte Sting legend joining us, head coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks, Dawn Staley. How's it going, coach?
How you doing? How's everybody doing?
We are doing great, and we are so glad to hear from you. And so let's get this thing going. Coach, first, we got to start off. Your name is starting to come up in potential head coaching candidate rumors for the Charlotte Hornets. What are your thoughts on that, and what would be the biggest benefit and challenge of that?
Thoughts? I haven't been contacted, but it's rumored. It's been rumored. I don't have a passion to coach at the pro level, NBA or WNBA. My passion has always been young people. Like I consider myself a dream merchant for my players. And I really feel like this is my calling. And although, you know, I've never had the itch to go to the next level, I do think of it as a challenge, and I am drawn to challenges. But my passion lies right here on the collegiate level.
Coach, we talked about, and I said in the introduction, talking about you playing for the Charlotte Sting back in the day. I once upon a time as a young man came to check you guys out a couple of times. And what are some of your fondest memories with the Charlotte Sting in your time here in the Queen City?
Fondest memory, probably the season we started 1-10, and then we ended up, I think we went like 17-4 to finish the season and went all the way to the WNBA finals. We lost to the Sparks in the NBA finals. So I thought that was probably the fondest memory. But the great thing about it is I keep in touch with my teammates from the Sting, like Charlotte Smith, Andrea Stinson, Allison Feaster, like Rhonda Mapp. Like Rhonda Mapp was texting me all through the NCAA tournament. She was talking about post play and what our post players had to do. So, and then Stick came to the parade. So, I mean, I recruited Allison Feaster's daughter, Sarah Strong. So, I mean, it's cool to see us just remain friends and stay in contact and just kind of continue the memory that we started like many, many, many years ago.
Dawn, that was unbelievable, sweet, sweet Charlotte nostalgia that you just gave us, and we appreciate you for that. It's Dawn Staley, South Carolina women's basketball coach, joining us here on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. I want to get to this championship, Dawn, because you were somebody that was so emotional after you won the title, and you already have a couple championships. I know all of them mean a lot, but it seemed like you were really emotional after this one, maybe even more so, being brought to tears. Was it the undefeated record? Was it this specific group of girls? What was it about this championship compared to other ones that you were moved to tears the way you were after the title?
Oh, I thought about last year and how we lost and how the who I thought was, you know, one of the best story classes of our program didn't get an opportunity to, I mean, yeah, they won a national championship, but they didn't end their careers in a way that they probably envisioned and how I envisioned. And I just didn't like the way we lost last year. So I held on to that for a year. And it was really a heavy load to bear. And then to finally just kind of do it and do it with this team, an unlikeliest group of players who started off, you know, not, I mean, there was no belief. It was all fight. It was all get in shape. It was all get the class on time. It was all communicate with the staff. It was just, we went back to ground zero and we had to start all over again. So nobody was thinking about national championship in June when we got together. We weren't really even talking about national championship in December, although we knew the potential at that point. But we never thought about being undefeated. Like each and every game, we never brought it up. Like we never talked about it because when you're as close as we were to the situation, we saw all of our deficiencies. I mean, it wasn't good. Like we still marvel about, like, hey, we won a national championship and we did it in an undefeated way, and we still cannot believe it. Although we walk past the trophy every day in the office, and you know we got the game on recorded, and we oftentimes put it on and just kind of watch it. So it was all of that that made it truly emotional, and I'm a God-fearing woman, and some things don't make sense to me. They don't. Like, this year did not make sense to me. Like, if we would have won last year, it made sense to me because we had the best team. We just didn't have a good day. And sometimes God wants you to, you know, bear down and believe in him, because I don't have any other reason to, I can't explain, you know, why we won a national championship this year. I mean, yes, we were talented, but we had some deficiencies that I didn't think we could overcome, but we overcame them. And, you know, this team decided that it wanted to win all of their games. Like, every game that we went into, you know, I felt like we could win, but I also felt like we could lose as well. But they never felt like that. They never made us feel like that. It was just us. The law of averages say you don't go through a season and win every game. It just doesn't happen that way very often. So I think at that moment we won, my cup runneth over. Like, I could not, you know. The only emotion was to let it out and to cry. And now that I did, you know, I got my point guard, Raven Johnson, is always putting two fists up to her eyes now and rubbing. So I won't be able to live that down.
That's okay. I think it's a fair trade-off for three titles. It's South Carolina women's basketball coach Dawn Staley joining us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Coach, you seem to have a hard time explaining it to yourself. What if I told you to try to explain this to a Dawn Staley just 3 years on the job, when you go 10-18, 14-15, 18-15. If you were to try to explain to yourself then, hey, don't worry, you're going to have three titles, you're going to have multiple Final Four appearances, despite going under 500 a couple times and barely getting over that your third year, how would you react then?
Well, I know how I reacted to it. Those first couple of seasons you ran it off, I knew it was professional suicide. Like, when I took the job here and we had to go through what we went through, if I had known it was going to turn out this way, you know, I would say I would have worked as hard. I would say that to make sure it happened. But, you know, honestly, my career, you know, my path is divinely ordered. I truly believe that. Like, because, you know, I came in this thing with no coaching experience, not wanting to be a coach. You know, I got into coaching because of the challenge of turning Temple around. Like, I'm drawing the challenges. That was a challenge, and the AD basically knew what button to push when it came to me sitting there not even knowing that I was in an interview. Like, I didn't even know I was being interviewed. I had never been on an interview before in my life, you know, when I, 24 years ago, when I sat in front of Dave O'Brien. I was just there because I told him no so many times through a mutual friend. And then the Final Four was in Philly in 2000, and I was like, he knew I was coming because I was with the USA basketball team. So I was like, let me just go talk to this man and let him know I'm good. I'm good. I'm still playing in the WNBA. And then somehow I walked out of there, like, really thinking about being a coach. And then 2 weeks later, I took the job, and the rest is history.
Coach Don Staley joining us here on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Coach, look, you mentioned interviews. I don't want to belabor the point, but our listeners are begging for the question again about the NBA. I know you talked about you don't have the interest in it. I will ask you this. If the Hornets did reach out for an interview opportunity, would you turn that down because you want to stay in Columbia so badly, or would you accept it just to hear him out?
I would listen. Here's why. I mean, I have no, like, believe me when I say this, I have no desire to coach at the NBA level. Now, someone could be, you know, really smart enough to tap into my love to be challenged, but I would take the information, because I did interview for the Portland Blazers job. And you know what I did with that? I wrote down every question. And if there's another woman that's ever in the position of wanting an NBA job, I'm going to give her all the information that I got. And I do believe they were really straight up when I was being interviewed. Like, I do think they... I don't think they were going to hire me, but they didn't treat the interview process like that. So I think that was pretty cool of them to do that. So it's all about information. It's all about passing information on. Now, I'll say that, and then, you know, the Charlotte Hornets, even if they did have interest, they're not going to have interest in me now.
Coach, for the young women that may catch this interview, what is it that you would tell them that you're looking for in a woman that's going to join your program?
I'm looking for someone, you know, similar to me in that they are drawing the challenges, because they'll be challenged every single day. And from those challenges, they'll create some habits that will allow them to be a heck of a basketball player, but also to take those habits and be a heck of a person and impact the world in some way. Like, they'll never fail. Like, if any player that has come through our program, whether it's Temple or South Carolina, they won't fail in life, because they've been challenged so much and they've equipped themselves with so much that whatever challenge they face, they'll know the mechanisms that's needed to figure it out and to come on top. So they only need to have the thirst of enjoying being challenged. That's it. I mean, obviously you got to be talented, you got to be good, you got to have all of that. But the intangible piece to their success is, you know, the drive that they have.
All right, Coach, the very last thing that I have for you, you know, I like to dress a little bit myself, you know, and so we noticed the style on the court. So I got to know, what goes into the wardrobe choices before you walk out there on the court? Just how long does it take for you to get so drippy?
Well, I mean, for, like, if we're going to the Final Four, you know, that outfit's probably picked out probably a month or two, or actually, the jacket that I wore in the national championship, I bought last spring. So, and then the one before that, Last spring, actually, all of those I got last spring, about this time. So I didn't know they would be like Final Four outfits until we got closer to the Final Four, because I didn't even really look in that part of my closet. But when it was, when I said we got a shot, and I was thinking about NCAA outfits, because I like to pull tags in the tournament. I do. I like to. I like to pull tags. So it's that. I mean, sometimes you just put it on and you know this is it. Like, I do try my outfits on, and it feels like a winner in that moment. Sometimes I try stuff on, and I'm like, nah, this is a tournament outfit. Nah, this is a Final Four outfit. Nah, I can't do this right now. So it's just that. It's just, I mean, it's much like, it's a feeling. You know, when you're going to a cool concert or something, you know what the right fit is. You'll try different stuff on, you'll be like, nah, this is not it. Like, if you go to a Beyonce concert, you got to be right.
You find you a coach that knows what a Final Four fit is, Wes.
I love it. Well, folks, that was Dawn Staley, 3-time national champion, joining us on the Body Works Plus Guest Hotline. You can follow her on Twitter or X, whichever you prefer, at Dawn Staley. Coach, we greatly appreciate the time, and we wish you much success down the road.
Thank you.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Ooh, and already a ton of questions coming in for Steve Smith on the FanDuel text line. I got to tell you, though, we kind of pre-prepared for this conversation because, well, we try to be two pretty buttoned-up dudes. We are talking draft right now with Carolina Panthers legend, Hall of Honor member, and, of course, NFL Network analyst. Check out his work over at Underdog Fantasy. His YouTube channel has just been on fire with all the draft breakdowns here the last couple of months, several weeks, especially leading up to the NFL draft. We've got Agent 89, Steve Smith Sr., back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. It's always good to catch up in the offseason. Smitty, how you been, bud? I appreciate you.
Man, I'm doing good, man. Just I've been grinding, looking at all this film. Oh, goodness. I'm tired of watching film, bro. Like, I'm so ready for the draft to be over because there are just so many things going on, right? I don't know if you know, but the Las Vegas Raiders, supposedly they're talking, trying to move up. I know last year, which expedited the reason why the Carolina Panthers and the Chicago Bears were able to do that trade, because I remember last year that the Las Vegas Raiders were trying to creep up even then up in the draft. So trying to get a quarterback is important. Before you get into it, think about this. The first 13 picks, 1 through 13, obviously the Vikings have 2, the Bears have 2 as well, the Cardinals have 2. But out of the first 13 picks, 7 of the first 13 picks, their biggest need is quarterback.
That's crazy.
It's insane, because it's what I talk about when you have a killer workout at the gym, and then on the empty stomach, or maybe you're intermittent fasting, whatever you're doing, when you go to the grocery store after a hell of a workout, you shop with your eyes and your stomach. You don't shop with your wallet and your mind. And a lot of times what happens, you overbuy. You reach for things that sometimes are outside of your calorie count, and you pay later.
That's one of your best analogies ever. Seriously, as somebody who is intermittent fasting every day, I have to pack my lunch before I do anything, because if not, I'll eat garbage after a workout. That's such a great analogy. I love that. Your draft work, you have been pouring through the film. Every time I open up YouTube, the first recommendation I get is a new Steve Smith breakdown. So you're putting in a ton of work right now. Let me ask you this, though. Speaking of needs and what teams need, I mean, Carolina's got 2 second-round picks. They're not picking on Thursday, but you can get really good players in the top 40. We all know this.
33 and 39. I think for a lot of people, it's a foregone conclusion that they have to take a wide receiver with their first pick at 33. Do you think that's the only thing that they should be looking at with 33?
No, it's not what you look at 33 or the only thing. You got to understand with what I stated about these quarterbacks, there are going to be some things that happen. Let's just say hypothetically that the Commanders do move out of that number two spot for whatever reason, or the Chargers move out of their spot. All of a sudden, somebody does something that nobody is prepared for, or the Cardinals move down for whatever dumb reason, right? You have someone that does something that they're not prepared for, where the Tennessee Titans, they need an offensive tackle, edge, D tackle, wide receiver, linebacker. Their preferred biggest need is offensive tackle. What happens hypothetically if they move down to 7 and someone moves up, say the Broncos or the Vikings or the Las Vegas Raiders? Then all of a sudden, what do you do? Because Tennessee needs a tackle, the Falcons need an edge, the Jets need, you know, a linebacker or a tight end, depending on who you talk to. Right, the Saints, they need a tackle as well, linebacker, D tackle, wide receiver, corner. Right, the Colts' preferred biggest need is corner, but I don't see them passing up a speed guy because he adds an extra level. So all of these things, if people don't pick, air quotes, what they're supposed to pick, it throws everybody into a loop, and then all of a sudden, that's where you have a run on players. That's where people, you hear people reach, right? They have a player voted or kind of graded in the fifth round, but someone else needs him in the fourth. Sometimes you got to leapfrog that person you know is in competition with you that is looking for that player in the fifth, but now somebody's going to leapfrog and get their guy in the fourth. Then all of a sudden, you find yourself in a quandary, and what do you do? So, with that being said, the 33rd pick and the 39th pick in the second round, the 65th in the third, the in the fourth round. But here's really where I see the value. It's those back-to-back picks in the fifth round. Because 41 and 42, you can flex one of those guys and get multiple picks because technically I only have 7, right? And so you can use that fifth round to get some guys because that fifth round, fourth through the seventh, that's developmental. That's all it is. They're going, hey, this is a guy who's a project. He has some things that we need to improve, whether it's behavior, whether it's technique, or sometimes he just wasn't coached right, or he was not playing in a big school, and so he's missing some key components to being a starter. But if we can develop him, all of a sudden, maybe in a year or two or 3 years from now, he can really help us because he's going to be cheap, and the guy that is leaving, he's expiring because of age or his cap hit. Well, all of a sudden you got to move on. And so, you know, things like that happen and people aren't always prepared.
Steve Smith Sr. with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. I've been telling folks about your top 10 wide receivers list that you pushed out earlier today.
And some folks are mad, man. Some folks are mad.
That's what's great about draft time. That's what's great about draft time.
But it's been amazing. Like there are even some of the guys who are drafted, who are about to be drafted, are hitting me up talking about, okay, OG, I see you 100 and like taking notes. Listen here, napkins and paper towels. You got to understand we ain't cut from the same cloth. So you barking up the wrong tree and got to understand you're a chihuahua and I'm a pet bull and I got rabies. So if I bite you, it may not go the way you want it to go.
So I'm scanning the list and I got to get about halfway down it before I think I see guys that are going to be in Carolina's range. And I want to talk about a couple of these guys. And yeah, I want to start with Xavier Worthy because I'm one of those guys. When I saw the 40 time, I was like, nope, I've seen Darius Hayward Bay and John Ross fool guys. I'm not getting caught up with the speed thing. And then I looked at your breakdown. I went back and watched some more. And I do see a guy who runs more of the route tree than I gave him credit for initially.
Yeah.
And I do think he's more than just a speed guy. What makes him more than just a speed guy?
Well, his speed, obviously. Well, Stark did a really good job. A.D. Mitchell and Worthy are two different individual route runners. Their responsibilities were different. There are some things that Worthy needs to work on, but here's the value with Worthy. One, 4.21, officially the fastest ever. So no one is going to pass up on that because that adds another level to your offense that you can't grow, you can't lift, you can't get that. That is God-given. And so when you have that, and then now think about this, he adds a value by playing punt return. Do you put him on kickoff return with the new rules? So technically, he can be a two, maybe three, three player that can contribute and be one person. So that means you have three roster spots or two roster spots eating up by one guy. Man, that's a freaking value right there. That is what the draft is about. Using your brain, right, not your stomach, in what does this kid bring, and overall, how can he help and increase us? Then the other guy, you know, people are talking about they want Leggett,
yep,
right, in the second round. At the 33rd position, the 39th position, I don't think that's actually a reach. I think that's exactly where he needs to be because significantly difference between the top four guys compared to Leggett. Leggett had one hell of a year. Let me repeat that. Leggett had one hell of a year. Mm-hmm. The problem that everybody's looking at, they're looking at it through their rose-colored glasses of that one year when understanding this process of evaluation is the whole thing. What you did or did not do when and while you were there. He had some unforeseen circumstances. God bless him. He got in a car accident, a motorcycle accident, only missed two games with where he had road rash on his face, like on his face. But then he lost his parents, and that sickens me, and that sucks for him. However, you still can't excuse the reasons why. And, yes, he didn't have great quarterback play. But there's a lot of guys in college who don't have great quarterback play, who don't go from 71 receptions to from 29 to 71. Like, that's a huge jump. And the question is why. But he does bring something to the table. How much and what? I don't really know in regards to Carolina because here's the first question you need to answer. What roles do you have on your current roster? And what do you foresee them? And then where does he fit in that talent level with your wide receivers this year? It's super deep, but where does he fit in? Is he playing X? Is he playing Z? Is he going to replace Adam Thielen, who at some point will be replaced, right? I don't know. We don't know this coaching staff's identity, and they're trying to figure it out this offseason. They just got hired. But overall, whether we like it or not, we're going to find out whomever they get. Where he fits in, how does he fit in, and who is the Mike Evans with Canales when he was in Tampa Bay? Who is the Chris Godwin when he was in Tampa Bay? Who's the Joshua Palmer, right? Who is this guy? Who's that guy? The players are going to have to answer that question, not what they film from college, but what they do on the actual field each and every Sunday.
Your colleague at the network, Tom Pelissero, said earlier today that he's hearing that both Xavier Leggett and Keon Coleman could end up in the end of the first round, which with the Coleman thing specifically is fascinating to me. And this is where I want your trained eye to talk about him because I can't recall too many prospects that were this all over the board, depending upon who you ask. Some people say that Coleman's 40 times a problem and that as a contested catch guy, it might not translate to the next level. Others are saying, no, he's that kind of dude. He's an athlete. He can eat in a lot of situations. What is your breakdown of Keon Coleman?
Oh, it's tough with Keon Coleman because, you know, I'm a hater. So, but he's slotted to be a round two, round three guy because everybody's like, oh man, he was a dog when he was at Michigan State. Really? He didn't have 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. Jalen Reed was the dog when he was at Michigan State. And here's the other part. He left Michigan State after the big dog left, and they said, oh, he didn't have a quarterback. I understand that. But there are some things in his game that you still question. Yes, on the field, at the combine, he was sloppy in his route running. People have said, well, you know, the game is not on the field at the combine. Well, the combine is there for a reason. They measure that for a reason. Some of those guys did not run very good routes at the combine because those routes were not a lot. They didn't practice those routes. They were trying to run the pressure, the lights. You know, so that's important. And then some of the interviews I heard weren't spectacular, right? Then the other part is he didn't have 1,000 yards as well. So I'm a little bit confused on what's a dog. Is a dog a 600-yard receiver? Because last time I checked, that's not a dog. They don't let unless you, like, in your 15th year. And you've just kind of, you know, been playing so consistently, you know, the last couple of years, 600 yards, then they'll let you get in a Pro Bowl. But last time I checked, if you got 656 yards, what damn Pro Bowl are you going to? Not in this league with Tyreek Hill, Waddle, and Chase, and even old heads like D-Hop, like, you know, A.J. Brown. Like, there's a number of guys, you know, that Mike Evans on his 10th consecutive, 11th consecutive year with 1,000 yards. When has 600 yards been a benchmark?
There you go. Steve Smith, I look forward to your coverage this week, brother. Thank you for the time. We'll do it again real soon.
Appreciate it.
You tuned in to Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte Sports Fan.